But before I go to Spain, I just want to quote from a letter from doctors in Bergamo in northern Italy, a letter they sent to the Massachusetts Medical Society, which just gives us an idea of what how bad the situation can become. These doctors write, "Our own hospital is highly contaminated and we are far beyond the tipping point. 300 beds out of 900 are occupied by COVID-19 patients. Fully 70% of ICU beds in our hospital are reserved for critically ill COVID-19 patients with a reasonable chance to survive. The situation here is dismal, as critically ill COVID-19 patients force us to operate well below our normal standard of care. Waiting times for an intensive care bed are hours long. Older patients are not being resuscitated and die alone without appropriate palliative care, while the family is notified over the phone, often by well-intentioned, exhausted and emotionally depleted staff with no prior contact with them. But the situation in the surrounding area is even worse. Most hospitals are overcrowded, nearing collapse with medications, medical ventilators, oxygen and personal protective equipment are not available. Patients lie on floor mattresses. The healthcare system struggles to deliver regular services, even pregnancy care and child delivery, while cemeteries are overwhelmed, which will create another public health problem. In hospitals, healthcare workers and ancillary staff are alone trying to keep the system operational. Outside the hospitals, communities are neglected, vaccination programs are on standby, and the situation in prisons is becoming explosive with no social distancing. We have been in quarantine since March 10. Unfortunately, the outside world seems unaware that in Bergamo, this outbreak is out of control." Well, I just wanted to read that because it gives a sort of benchmark of how bad the situation can become. Here in Spain, or in the Spanish state, excuse me, we've not reached this point yet. But if radical and absolutely draconian measures aren't taken, then we could easily arrive at that point. At the moment, in the 17 Spanish, what are called states in Australia, what would be states in Australia called autonomous communities here, 8 out of 17 have exhausted their ICU units. So there's a dreadful, intense war to get new ICU units set up in sort of field hospitals. And Madrid and the Catalonia are the worst hit in this situation. There's a generalized shortage of equipment, especially of respirators, and the level of stress on professionals, especially I would say the younger generation who've never gone through anything remotely like this, is extremely hard and extremely high, and the infection rate amongst professionals is very high. For example, there's over 1,000 doctors, nurses and other health workers who are infected in Catalonia alone. But this situation we can still stop this, with appropriate measures, we can still stop this becoming as bad as the situation in Italy. I want to describe just how health workers are tackling the crisis here and just stress some of the points that Mary and Elizabeth already made, which is this thing is going to be defeated by the coordinated effort and sacrifice of ordinary people, of ordinary workers, by which I mean, you know, from the health professionals down to people who were never noticed in normal life, like the people who are cleaning the streets. In the Spanish state, unfortunately, the problem has been exacerbated by the decision of the Spanish government about how to handle the crisis. This goes to the centralization decision that's already been mentioned. What they decided was that instead of letting the existing health system, which overwhelmingly operates through the autonomous communities, through the states in Australian terms, instead of letting them continue and the central government acting as a coordinating and facilitating body, they decided to centralise everything and take all the major decisions at the central Spanish level. What this meant is that the federal equivalent would be equivalent to the federal Department of Health here is making decisions, or is having to make decisions, on things like procurement, for which it doesn't have the competence or the people. So you have over-centralised sort of a bureaucratic chaos at the centre, and that inevitably has led to it's a situation where hospitals, health regions, just try and survive as they can. So you get centralised bureaucracy, and then at the local level, people just trying to set up field hospitals, get equipment, get masks, get respirators, and make the system survive however they can do that. We have a very strange situation here in Catalonia, because you've got the national question, which I'll talk about in a minute, and of course politics doesn't stop just because you've got a life and death situation. Here in Barcelona, there's a push, and it's successful. I've expanded the number of ICU units from 3 times in the space of 10 days here. But this is, it's a push to just set up field hospitals in, you know, sports centres, gymnasiums and places like that. And where does the equipment come from? Well, you get to the situation where local mayors are ringing up bed manufacturers, or going down to IKEA, which is closed, and saying, how many beds have you got here? I want to buy 200 beds. We have the very bad situation where respirators, there's a big shortage of respirators here. The response, however, has been that local industry, and this is even, you know, big industry, which is closed down, has said, we'll churn out respirators for you. So, you know, one of these holies of capitalist production, which is patent law, goes out the window. And I just want to say a few things about, you know, what openings this gives to socialist policy later on in this presentation. But patent law is the first thing, because what's happened is, of course, that we just grab whatever piece of equipment we can, out of which we can make a respirator, and this gets done. In Barcelona, there's a consortium which is already churning out 300 of these improvised respirators a week. They've been certified as functional and working, and not going to place anybody's lives in risk inadvertently by the Spanish Ministry of Health. And similar things are happening in other parts of the Spanish state. Now, my third area, which I want to talk about, and I just want to mention, this is in much more detail in the interview I did in Links with Fred Fuentes, but the third area I want to talk about is the policies needed to defeat this virus. In the Spanish state, we're already gone through what you're going through in Australia, which is the great debate about, well, how total does the shutdown have to be? And effectively what happened, if we will get into the Italian scenario that I described at the beginning, if we get into that scenario, it will be because we're 2 weeks behind the curve here. And the reason we're 2 weeks behind the curve is the central government was under a great pressure from industry not to close down everything. And of course, here we come into, you know, politics in the Spanish state. From the beginning, the Catalan government, which is supposedly to be a right-wing nationalist government, was telling the progressive government in Madrid, which is the Socialist Workers Party plus United Unidas Podemos government, that they had to implement a complete shutdown, and that they would be given, you know, that their medical experts were telling them, their consultative committees of epidemiologists were telling them the sooner you have a complete shutdown of everything but emergency services and absolutely essential production, the sooner you do that, the more lives you will save. And that was an argument. And of course, because this is being proposed by the Catalan government, it therefore became unacceptable. Ipso facto. Oh, well, they're proposing it, therefore we can't do it. And when the Balearic Islands government, which is a PSOE government, proposed essentially the same thing, and Ireland, the Balearic Islands have been effectively sealed off from the rest of the Spanish state, that was accepted. And we're already seeing that that has been a successful, more successful in the Balearic Islands. The rate of contamination and the rate of spread of the virus is discernibly less in the Balearic Islands than it is here, and certainly in Madrid, where it is closest to being into sort of Italian situation. One of the issues that is needed to defeat the virus and is massive testing, which goes beyond the bounds of the existing health system. That is to say, in today, a study by the Imperial College in London brought out a study, their update on the COVID virus, which said that up to 15 times as many people in probably in Spain and in other European countries were actually infected by the virus, probably. We could project that, but we don't know because there's not been massive testing. One of the reasons that Singapore, Vietnam, Taiwan, other Asian countries have had a better policy and had much more success in containing the viruses, of course, that they learned from the SARS and MERS epidemics, and on the basis of that pretty horrifying experience, they introduced community testing on a broad basis. Any sign of a symptom, people have to take a test. Isolation takes place straight away, and this way you can keep the so-called, you know, the curve flatter. But when you have a community, a public health system which is based on patient care, but not on public health, as in community-based public health, then of course it's hard, and now it's got to be done to improvise a community-based public health system. And the harder and the more privatized your health system is, of course, and we'll see this in the United States, the even harder it is to do that, because you're infringing on the right not to have public health. You're infringing on the right not to have big government interfering in your lives. So that's a point that is stressed by the doctors in Bergamo. This article is worth reading. I sent it to Australia. I don't know exactly who I sent it to. Can't remember that. But the article is worth reading because it's basically saying, in this face of this sort of crisis, you need, they don't say this, but this is what they're referring to, you need Cuban style public health. You know, we don't want to discuss, you know, the adequacies and inadequacies of the Cuban health system, but one thing is certain, that it is a public health system based on prevention, community health standards, and strict control against any sort of epidemic. My fourth point is on the effect of all of this on Spanish state politics. As I said earlier, just because this is a question of life and death doesn't mean that the political fight stops. At the all Spanish level, of the right wing, I said, "Oh, well, this is a national emergency. It's a war. It's all everybody together. Solidarity between all political forces." But at the same time, of course, they saying, when this is all over, we'll be telling you, you know, what you did wrong. The Spanish right finds it a bit difficult to manoeuvre in this situation because the way this centralisation has been done in Spain is in a very Spanish way, with the army being brought in, with the police force being given a big role, and with the whole thing being presented as Spain will defeat the virus. So it's, you know, it's not human beings fighting the virus. It's Spain is fighting the virus, which of course then produces an allergic reaction in the nationalities in Catalonia and Euskadi in the Basque country and in Galicia to a lesser extent. But in the, for example, we have army units, decontamination army units in Catalonia at the moment. The immediate response at the beginning was these people were sent in without being asked for, but just to prove the point, you know, who's in charge now? We're in charge now. We're now overriding and establishing our presence. Now, given the intensity of the crisis, of course, the Catalan government and local councils are now using these army units and requesting their support, their decontamination units. But these, of course, this could have been done in a completely uncentralized way. Not a completely uncentralized way, but it could have been done if the PSOE government is serious about its rhetoric about Spain being a nation of nations, and we look to collaborate and the central government looks to be a facilitator and a coordinator, then they could have done this centralization in a very a different way. The other thing I'd like to stress is what's already been mentioned by Mary, is that the far right is mobilizing to use this crisis. So this will be, and we've already got it yesterday in Hungary. What happened in the Hungarian parliament yesterday was that the ruling government, the ruling party, passed a sort of enabling law, Hitler-style 1933 enabling law, which effectively suspends all rights, suspends the constitution, suspends elections, and gives the government the right to do what it likes. And this was voted through. And we will see a lot more of attempts to use this crisis by the far right. The other use of the crisis here is scapegoating. In Spain, of course, scapegoating from the right is just part of the daily, you know, it's just in the atmosphere. It's, you know, what you have for breakfast. Who are they scapegoating today? But one theme they're running on is that the big propagator of this virus was IWD, International Women's Day. It's because they let, you know, those feminists or feminazis out on the streets on International Women's Day. This was a big propagator of the virus. So we can expect to hear a lot more about that when the crisis, or if and when the crisis is finally overcome. Finally, I just want to make some points about the political ramifications of the crisis and what openings it gives us for socialist solutions. Because, as comrades have already said, it is a situation of dramatic crisis of governance, ordinary capitalist governments, where they suddenly have to drop a whole lot of their holies of holies. Suddenly these holies of holies with which, you know, the working class and all the mass of ordinary people are instilled that things that have to be done, deficits have to be brought under control. I mean, I think in Australia that's been an absolute obsession. I can't be sure of that. But suddenly, of course, deficit reduction targets have gone out the window. The patent law, as I've already mentioned, has gone out the window. At the European level, the Growth and Stability Pact, which is like the 11th commandment here, which is the requirement of all member states of the European Union to meet deficit reduction targets, that's been dropped. No sackings in here, there's a whole debate about, you have a law for laying people off unavoidably, and that's what's being applied. And that will give people, workers laid off will get, I think it's 75, don't quote me on this, 75% or 80% of their usual wage. But of course, the bosses are already and pleading force majeure, saying, well, we can't just lay people off, we've got to sack them. And the government came out, the UP Minister for Labor said, no, we're not going to have any sackings, and said there wouldn't be any sackings. And this was actually a bit of bullshit, because all they did was they they applied the law that if there's no agreement over sackings, then that is to say, if the unions are strong, essentially, that's what it means. If the unions have some presence in the workplace, then the boss has to pay more, has to pay 33 days wages for every year of service instead of 20 days wages for every year of service. But it is this brings up the whole question of what has to be done. And Elizabeth has already talked about this, but there's some good examples. I think the best example is the Danish example today, which is essentially the Danish government has said, we'll just put everything on freeze. Don't worry, stay at home and we will pick up the tab. We won't pick up the whole tab. It'll be 75% or 80% of the wage. I don't know the full details. But essentially this means, and the Catalan government has taken this up here as the next move that has to be adopted in Spain, which is if you have a guaranteed minimum income, then this is a simple thing that can be understood. It helps the self-employed, it helps small business, and then that way people's anguish about what's going to happen to them, and especially people in the less organised areas, you know, the self-employed, small traders, that's a very big sector here in Spain, you know, 3 million, 4 million people, then that anguish is stopped. And so even the Spanish former treasurer, who's now a deputy governor of the European Central Bank, a person called the Guindos, has said we should introduce a guaranteed minimum income for everybody for the duration of the crisis. Well, why just for the duration of the crisis? That should be, you know, this is another example of a measure that they could be forced to take, because as has been pointed out already, the measures they take are the least they think they need to take, and then of course they have to go and do something else more. But this is an example of the sort of measure that should be campaigned for. What is the likely size of the crisis? Well, there's a lot of statistics going around, but the bank rescue package in Spain from the financial cost of crisis was, this is the government forked out for the finance sector, 60 billion euros. And that will be small compared to the sort of figure that's needed here. After this crisis, as I say, figures are thrown around of between a 5% and a 15% drop in production in gross domestic product. This crisis will also exacerbate north versus south tensions within the European Union. They were very strong at the time of the financial crisis, and about we were not going to bail out those Greeks. Those Greeks are going to pay, and that is going to be small scale. Already, the Dutch finance minister has come out. I don't know why it is always Dutch finance ministers who are the nastiest people in Europe, but anyway, the Dutch finance minister has come out and said, Spain and Italy didn't use the boom to cut back on their debt and their deficit. And now they want us to bail them out again. You know, that has produced a very violent reaction, even including, France, I must say. Macron has come out against this stance, as has Portugal. But it just shows you the intense pressures that they're going to be operating in the European Union. The European Union got out of the previous financial crisis basically through the European Central Bank, just churning out money in very creative ways. But now we've got zero interest rates or negative interest rates. So monetary policy and churning out money is not going to be enough. There's going to have to be a big increase in public investment, which opens up the whole question of public investment for what? For a green transition is obviously what we would say, a serious green transition, not just the sort of fake transition that they're talking about here. One interesting thing that can come up in this situation, I think, is a point that we can make as socialists, is people will say, but this is going to be a huge increase in the debt burden. Future generations are going to be lumbered with this. And one thing that was said during the Second World War is if you worried about the size of the deficit that's incurred by financing the war, then let's impose a special tax on the wealthy. That is to say, put a special wealth surcharge on savings over, say, you know, in the Australian case, $500,000, if you're worried about the deficit. You can even make it a temporary wealth surcharge and say, well, we'll pay it off in the future when we can. But it just is a way of dramatising the fact that, you know, those who can afford to pay for this crisis should be the ones who can pay for it. And let me just finish on this point. I think if this obviously demonstrates, this crisis demonstrates and makes it possible for us to campaign, for socialists to campaign, and it will be very easy to campaign here, for strengthening of public community-centred healthcare where this is already the basic framework of health delivery, which is the case in the Spanish state. And I must say, from an Australian point of being an Australian in Spain, the community health system here is like, paradise from our point of view, from the Australian point of view, compared to what we have in Australia, even, of course, more so than in the United States. But, of course, there's a lot of underfunding, there's creeping privatisation, there's the private sort of nibbling at me, trying to take bits of it out of the public system. That will all end. But this crisis, of course, makes it possible for us to sketch out and use the need for community-based healthcare to say this is how health should be delivered. Public health is actually a tautology. Public health is public. And therefore, if you've got private providers, they've got to be totally under control of the public system. And the perspective should be to gradually or at some speed or other weed out private provision and make public health totally public and funded from the tax system and based in the community. So I'll just leave it there, and I'm happy to take, of course, any questions about what's going on.